Hi everyone. Well, it's been such a long time and I would like to apologize for taking so long to make another episode. A lot has been happening in my life and we'll catch up, and a lot has been happening in Nigeria and a lot has been happening across Africa generally, which is what we are talking about today in this episode. So today I have a special guest. So my guest is from Ghana, and I will be doing a brief introduction before she joins us and introduces herself. So basically, she's a PhD student in education policy, teaching and leadership at the University of Maryland. In addition to her research in equity in higher education, she is very much invested in issues of Black feminism and queer liberation struggles. She is also a member of Silent Majority Ghana, which is a group that works within the Ghanaian queer liberation movement, and I'm looking forward to this conversation because it's going to teach me so much, and it's going to teach you so much about what's going on in Ghana and how we can all help and how we can all move forward in our liberation struggles across Africa. I love to see you beautiful. I want to see your light. Hi everyone. So Shaker is with me, who is my guest for this episode. Hi, Shaker.
Hi.
So please introduce yourself to my audience.
My name is Shakia. My pronouns are she, her. I'm excited to join you today. I don't know what else to add. I'm sure you've talked about me and my work. So I also don't like talking about myself. So.
Oh, that's fine. Same, actually. Yeah, so basically, we're going to be talking about what's going on in Ghana, what's been happening in Ghana. So, yeah, what has been happening in Ghana? What's happening in Ghana at the moment?
Yes. So the question is, what hasn't happened in Ghana at the moment, honestly? So as many of you may know, Ghana is currently in the kind of debate stage about passing a new law that is set to criminalize queer people, but not just queerness. It also sets to criminalize advocacy, being an ally, and essentially, you know, just all these different things that boil down to denying people, you know, their right to, one, exist, but also their right to freedom, right to association, and then denying them protection from cruel and unusual punishment because conversion therapy is on the bill as well. But in talking about the bill, I think it is helpful to know a little bit of the context about the queer rights movement in general in Ghana, but also all the events that essentially brought us here throughout 2021. So this, to make things shorter, because I actually gave my friend the whole rundown on Sunday and it took us 3 hours. So I'm gonna make it shorter. Yes. So the queer rights movement in Ghana is something that has been going on kind of for the most part underground, just because Ghana is one of the formerly colonized countries that still retains a colonial law in our books that criminalizes not necessarily queerness, but the language of the bill criminalizes what is known as unnatural carnal knowledge, which, I mean, it covers a whole range of sexual acts, if we're being honest. But technically, it would apply to straight people. But the interpretation of it in Ghana has only applied to queer people historically. And this bill, like I said, it's been on the books since colonial times. It was not removed when Ghana, you know, transitioned out of being a British colony to being a republic. For some reason, it stayed on the books, but it's not, it's also not something that we had really seen people being prosecuted under. So it was kind of the law that people would bring up when they wanted to be homophobic, but it wasn't something that was aggressively pursued. So like I said, the movement, you know, in Ghana has existed for quite some time underground. It wasn't until 2018 that we had an organization that formed and explicitly called itself a queer rights organization. And that would be LGBT Plus Rights Ghana, which is another org that I think has gained a lot of international popularity with everything that's happening. Because LGBT Rights Ghana called themselves LGBT Rights in the name, they have not been allowed to actually register as a formal organization. So a lot of their work over the past several years had been work that was going on mostly in online spaces and mostly to create awareness and community for queer people in those online spaces. So the homophobic atmosphere of Ghana, like I said, it's something that has always been around. For the most part, it kind of like flows into like an undercurrent, and then every so often we have an event where it comes up in the public discussion and then it like kind of goes back in the undercurrent again. So I think also in 2018 or yes, in 2018, we had another group that was formed. And this group was called the Council of Proper Family Values and Sexuality. I'm honestly butchering that name, but to be quite honest with you, I really don't care to look it up and get it right because I really don't like this group. But this coalition is formed by various different religious leaders. So we have like the Catholic Bishops Conference who are part of it, the leaders of various other denominations of Christianity in Ghana, including, you know, in partnership with the chief imam of the country, and then the Ghanaian Council of Chiefs, which is a council of our traditional chiefs, and also traditional religious practitioners. So, you know, every other day, all these religious groups don't get along.
Like,
but when it comes
to say that, like, you people don't even talk to each other.
Exactly. But when it came to homophobia, they organized like that. So this group has been around for a few years, and their chairperson, who also is kind of their like public facing person, his name is Foa Mwaneng. And Foa Mwaneng is a man who has been in the Ghanaian political scene for a while. He's actually one of the lecturers, well-known lecturers at the Law School of Ghana. So he's actually one of the people that's responsible for training new lawyers. But in his role with this coalition, his job has been to stir up homophobic attitudes against Ghanaian queer people. So in the last several years, he has made, you know, he has, it feels like he has a permanent place in Ghanaian media. Everyone gives him a platform. And he uses that platform to talk about how homosexuality is a sin, talk about how it's against our air quotes culture. And then one thing that he's done, which is very insidious, has been to call for conversion therapy for queer Ghanaians. He's also spread the lie that he has treated hundreds of queer Ghanaians through conversion therapy. I mean, I've never seen proof of it, but that's what he claims. And he saved all these people from being gay. So I bring up Foa Mwaneng and I bring up LGBT Plus Rights Ghana because in a lot of ways, these two different groups are the catalyst for the new wave that we're seeing. So Foa Mwaneng for the last several years has been trying to lobby our public officials to write an anti-queer law. I think there was one law that was proposed in 2019 that it just kind of disappeared from the public imagination. It just never, actually saying that it was proposed is the wrong term. It was threatened and nothing came out of it. So with that context in mind, and also in mind that in 2019, the World Council of Families, which is an American right-wing evangelical homophobic group, they're actually considered a hate group in the United States. They were allowed to host an anti-LGBT conference in Accra for some reason. And this conference was obviously attended by a lot of religious leaders, Foa Mwaneng, and a whole bunch of other people. So at the same time where, you know, organizing for queer people has been happening, there's also this very strong, very public kind of resistance to queer rights that is in a lot of ways linked, even if they don't admit it, it's linked to right-wing evangelical U.S. organizations as well. So in the beginning of 2020, LGBT Rights Plus Ghana, you know, after several years of being online, decided that they wanted to establish a physical space for queer Ghanaians to have a community space that they could, you know, work in, commune in, a space for people to stay if they don't have a home to stay. So it was really around the idea of creating a safe space for queer Ghanaians. So at the end of January, I believe it was January 30th or 31st, LGBT Plus Rights Ghana posted their grand opening, and they had this really beautiful event where, you know, artists performed, people attended. It was like this nice, heartwarming thing to open up their space. And this event was also attended by several foreign dignitaries in Ghana. So a few like ambassadors attended and things like that. And these ambassadors, you know, publicly at the event said, like, you know, we're behind queer people in Ghana. We will do what we can to support you. You know, just a beautiful, heartwarming, like everyone was feeling good.
Wow, I didn't even know that part, but yeah, go on.
Yes, so the event made its way on social media, and by virtue of being on social media, somehow Fowa Mwaneh found out about the center, and he made it his personal mission to then start a campaign calling for the arrest of the leaders of LGBT Rights Plus Ghana, calling for Nana Akufo-Addo, who's our president, to shut down this center and arrest the people who organized it. And he also started spreading this idea that because these foreign dignitaries attended this event, that, you know, homosexuality is a foreign thing. And like, here's the proof, because look at all these ambassadors.
Meanwhile, he brought his own, he brought his own set of people.
Yes. So, you know, let's just forget about the whole, like, Christianity itself not being African, or at least not being West African, even if we're going to say that it's, you know, but let's put that to the side for a second. So Fowa Mwaneh began his little campaign against the center on February 11th, and he was going on all these different talk shows, and he basically brought all this public attention to the center. And while he did that, it became a topic of national conversation. Unfortunately for us, that coincided with these vetting ceremonies for several ministers who had been appointed by Nana Akufo-Addo. So they had to go in front of parliament, answer questions and things like that before they could be confirmed. During these different hearings, several of those minister appointees were asked about gay rights in Ghana. And several of them took the opportunity, including the incoming Minister of Gender, the incoming Minister of Foreign Affairs, and a few others. But those people I'm mentioning because their roles are so linked to the topic, where they all said, you know, our laws say that homosexuality is illegal, which is not true. But then they also said, you know, this is Ghana, this is our culture, we get to decide, you know, that homosexuality is a crime. And if foreign governments want to interfere, that means they're trying to take away Ghana's sovereignty and they're trying to interfere in our politics. So they said all of those things, which didn't really make sense. And then, unfortunately for us, again, President Biden of the United States, sometime within all of that, made a public statement that the United States would be sanctioning countries where homosexuality was illegal. So Fowa Mwaneh and others, again, used Biden's statement to argue that, like, look at the West, they're trying to interfere, look at what Biden said, and we're not going to let America control our country. So all of that happened, and there was this like picking up of anti-queer rhetoric in the media. So we started seeing all of this media reports that was extremely homophobic, and the attitude of Ghanaians, like people were starting to get physically attacked. Like it was just creating this atmosphere that was very dangerous. In the middle of all that, one day we all woke up and we saw videos of the Ghanaian military police forcibly shutting down the community center, which is like open for maybe 2 weeks at most. So they stormed the community center. Luckily for all of us, the organization's leaders magically were not there that morning. One of them was there, but he managed to escape before they got into the building. So I think that the plan was to like ambush and arrest them, but they didn't get to arrest people. So they locked the center down, put a padlock on it. It was on the news. It was like this whole thing. So those leaders had to go into hiding. And another little known fact about that incident. So people know that the space is closed, but people don't know that the bank accounts, the personal bank accounts of the leaders of the group were all frozen and remain frozen with no legal reason for this. Nobody knows who froze the accounts, and they just remain frozen. So all the leaders went into hiding because there was also this rumor that the Ghanaian government was trying to figure out a way to prosecute them. So that happened, and that continues to be an ongoing thing. But then in the middle of all that, we still had this mounting public pressure for Nana Akufo-Addo to take a stance against queer people. So, you know, the Catholic Bishops Conference and several other Christian organizations were writing open letters to the president about gay people. And the one that really stuck with me was the one that came from the Catholic Bishops Conference, because that letter explicitly stated that according to the Bible, and it cited Bible verses, according to the Bible, homosexuals deserve death, basically. Wow. Because in the verses that they quoted, that's what God said. So there were all of these public statements coming out. And then Nana Akufo-Addo, who has previously, like in the last couple of years, said homophobic things, but in all of this had been silent. He went to a Methodist church and he was talking to leaders, and he made them a promise that as long as he was president, gay marriage would never be legalized and queer people wouldn't have rights. So he introduced this topic of gay marriage, which nobody had been talking about, which then inflamed the public sentiment even more, because, you know, people would be okay with like, don't ask, don't tell. But if you're going to like add gay marriage, then, you know. So that happened. And then we started to see people getting arrested for being gay, air quotes. So the first incident that we saw of this that was reported was a group of friends who were having a birthday party. Somebody told the police that it was a lesbian wedding. So they stormed this birthday party. They arrested all of the women in attendance. I believe there were 12 people that were arrested. And there was video that was filmed of this arrest by the police for some reason, where in the video you can hear people saying like, yes, we're going to burn them, they're going to die, this isn't our culture, like making all these threats. So these women were put in jail, and they refused to give them a bail hearing because they were claiming that the birthday party was happening in a different region than some of the women lived. So they were like, if we release them, they're just going to go back to Accra and we'll never find them, which, again, it's not a legal reason to hold someone. But because there was mounting public pressure, they ended up releasing the women. And they were like, when we send you a letter to come to court, you have to come to court. And then that was the end of that. So, you know, in that time, we're like still advocating for this community center to be reopened and the bank accounts to be unfrozen. And then at the end of May, it's honestly amazing that all of this happened within like 2.5 months at most. It's like back to back, right?
Like,
and I'm saying all of this minus even the reports of people getting attacked physically. Like, I'm not even factoring that in. Like, this is all the government stuff.
It's just so much. Like, I've been watching from Twitter, basically, and it's been insane. So,
yes.
Just tell us.
When I show you.
Wow.
Yes. So, at the end of May, because we had seen all of this, like, government action against queer people, there was a workshop that was held, and the purpose of the workshop was to educate people about their rights. So it was basically a workshop on, these are your rights, if you get arrested, this is what you can do, et cetera, et cetera. A few journalists found out about this workshop, and the journalists called the police and reported the workshop to the police, and those journalists went to the workshop and locked the doors. Mind you, I keep saying journalists because I want you to understand, like, that these are reporters.
What's their role? When did
They made themselves like vigilante police, I suppose. And they attended the workshop, locked the doors, they seized all the materials that were being used, and they basically held the activists and the people attending hostage until police was able to arrive and arrest them.
You never see citizens rile up to do other things, right? Like, to do things mm-hmm. actually confine them, to do things mm-hmm. that would actually, like, benefit them as citizens mm-hmm. of the state. You would never see them do stuff like that.
Yeah. Also, as journalists, why would you want to help state oppression? Because,
like, that's not even your role. You're like the watchdog role. Like, you're supposed to right. watch, you're supposed to advocate, you're supposed to
yeah. So, I mean, we could go into Ghanaian media, and that would be a whole other episode for you, honestly. But with the help of the media, the police arrested 21 people. And when they arrested these 21 people, the police released a statement that said that the reason these people were arrested was because they were, air quotes, spreading homosexuality, and that they were in to turn children into gays. So this police statement explicitly said, parents, you need to watch out for your kids because the gay people are trying to turn them gay. And that was the reason that was given for the arrest, according to the official police statement. However, once the arrest started gaining publicity, the police immediately changed their song to say that, oh, it was an unlawful gathering because of COVID, and that's why they arrested, blah, blah, blah. We know that's not true, but giving them the benefit of the doubt, a legal team was organized for these 21 people, and at every bail hearing that they went, for four bail hearings, they would show up to court, and the prosecutor would say, we don't have any evidence to prosecute them, so they would ask the judge to keep these people in jail so that they could collect evidence to prove their case.
Isn't it the other way around? You don't have evidence, so you release?
Exactly, because these people actually didn't do anything illegal, but they had already made the arrest, and at this point, you know, there was so much attention and a lot of attention from the West as well. So I think they were trying to legitimize their arrest after the fact. So it took four bail hearings for these people to finally be released, and they were held up until end of July, essentially. So we're going from the end of May to the end of July. These people have been in jail, and eventually they were transferred to prison for no reason for over 2 months. A lot of people ended up losing their jobs. People were disowned by their families. There were just so many consequences that people suffered because they were assumed to be gay people and thus assumed to be criminals in some way.
And this is even while suffering in jail and dealing with going to court, dealing with the police, dealing with fellow, inmates.
Yeah, so, I mean, the suffering that I cannot express what they must have gone through. So eventually they were released, but even with their release and the charges being dropped for their fourth bail hearing, when we went to court and when the judge finally realized that he could not detain these people anymore, he ruled, he was like, oh, I would release them if I could, but I can't because the case has been transferred to the attorney general and the attorney general is now presiding over the case and I can't rule against, like, whatever, the central government. But that's not something that any of these people or their lawyers had been informed of. So they didn't even know that the case had apparently been transferred. So now we have to mount a case in the courts in Accra because apparently it's been transferred. So that also, even though they were released physically, they still had this case that once again, their court dates would come and the prosecutor would say, we don't have any evidence. Can you like postpone it? So that kept going until actually like a week or two ago is when the case was finally dismissed. And when it was dismissed, the judge just said, oh, there's no evidence, you know, to prove this charge, instead of saying there was no legitimate charge to begin with. So even though thankfully they no longer have these charges against them, the official record does not actually vindicate these people whose lives have been ruined because of this case. So that was also going on. And then in the middle of all of that, there's just so much. In the middle of all of that, we get introduced to this member of parliament. His name is Sam George. Now, Sam George is someone that politically was not very well known. He won a role as a member of parliament, but from all accounts, it seems that he defaulted into that role because the person that most likely would have won dropped out of the election. So he was like this unknown political person who wasn't very well liked. His constituents didn't really like him and his party didn't really like him. So he took the opportunity to kind of fashion himself as a political superstar by going against queer people. So Sam George comes out of nowhere and he starts going on television and doing the same thing that I just said Full Morning had been doing. So homosexuality is a sin, it's against our culture, yada, yada, yada. And he starts to threaten that we're going to pass a new law that will criminalize homosexuality. We're going to put all of these people in jail because we have to protect our culture. So this is when the issue of a law started coming back up again, was because of Sam George. Now, while he was threatening this new law, Sam George was also spreading this claim that powerful gay people in Ghana wanted to get rid of him and that the powerful gay people had been calling him and threatening his life, and that if anybody runs against him or opposes him in elections, that means that, one, that person was secretly gay. So he said any politician that opposes him is secretly gay, but also, two, anyone who runs against him is funded by the powerful, rich, gay people in Ghana that nobody knows. Apparently they exist. And they must be like a secret cult or something.
Oh, good. It's so funny if all of this wasn't life-threatening. If we're just like watching a movie and, you know, this was just a character being a foolish person.
Of course, that didn't stop him. So he, for some reason, has become this national superstar who claims that he's fighting for Ghanaians, even though I cannot pinpoint any other thing he's done in his role as MP except this. So one day we wake up and Sam George and other MPs, including the Speaker of Parliament, are announcing that they have this bill that they're working on, and the bill is named ironically after Fulham Warning's little coalition. So it's called the Bill for Proper Humans, Values and Sex, or something like that. Family, you know, the usual. But it's named after Fulham Warning's group. Like, So we're supposed to not connect these two, but they have the same name for some reason. And they all say that, you know, this bill is introduced, blah, blah, blah. But because it is a private members bill, I'm not going to explain how Ghanaian government works because that's too much. But because it's a private members bill, which is not usually how new bills are introduced, they got to keep it a secret for a long time. So they didn't have to tell the public what was in the bill. So, you know, they're making all these threats. The Speaker of Parliament is strongly behind Sam George. And all of us are scrambling because what is the new law that's coming up? So eventually the language of the bill was leaked. And this is when we find out what it actually says. So the bill, the bill criminalizes every version of queerness or transness that you can think of.
The most explicit thing I have ever seen criminalizing homosexuality in Africa. It's so detailed. I'm sorry I had to jump in, but like when I saw it, like
that's what I said too, because in the Ghanaian conversation around queer rights, it's always been lesbians, gays, bisexuals and trans people, because that's kind of our cultural understanding of it. Not that I'm saying that Ghanaians are like not educated or anything, that's not what I'm saying, but that's
you understand.
But then this bill comes out and all of a sudden, you know, intersex people are criminalized, like asexual, you know, allies. And it doesn't make sense. But the reasoning, if you read the language of the bill that they gave for introducing this, is that they claim that they met with the Council of Chiefs, and all the chiefs claim that homosexuality is not part of our culture, which is not, that's not a legal argument. We are a democracy. It doesn't matter what the chiefs think.
Exactly.
They also claim that it goes against Christianity, which is somehow part of our culture, again, in this conversation. And then they start to use the statements of Akufo-Addo and his ministers as justification for this bill, because they were like, well, our president said that gay rights shouldn't be a thing, and this minister said this, and this minister said that. Like I said, it already criminalizes every iteration of being queer that you can imagine, but it also criminalizes things like being intersex, where it says if you're an intersex person, you will be forced to undergo gender surgery, whether you like it or not. But somehow, if you're a queer person, that same surgery becomes illegal. So, you know, criminalizes allyship. So if you are just an advocate, but literally if you're somebody who says, I believe gay people should have rights, could get 3 to 10 years in jail. If you're an actual queer person, you can get up to 3 years of jail time, or you can pay to undergo conversion therapy. You would have to undergo conversion therapy, or you go to jail.
Where do I stop?
Shelley. Other highlights of this is, ironically, this bill says that if you trigger warnings for your audience, if you sexually assault someone in a gay way, so like, you know, like any gay air quotes sex that's under duress or force, you can get up to 3 months in jail. But if you were an advocate, you can get up to 10 years in jail, which if you were truly concerned about protecting Ghanaians, that does not make any sense
at all.
Right. And then the bill criminalizes essentially what they are calling facilitating gay activities, I guess would be the term. So if you're a healthcare provider and you provide any sort of healthcare that to someone who could be considered a queer person, like jail for you. If you see, it literally says that if you witness any queer acts and you don't report it, also jail for you. So you could be minding your business, you know, at a bar somewhere, and suddenly going to jail because you minded your business. Like, it doesn't, And it also made reporting queer people mandatory. So like if you're a teacher, if you're a healthcare provider, any kind of official role, and you know a queer person, you know of a queer person, you know of queerness happening in whatever way, and you don't report it, like you also face jail. So I think I could keep going, but I think people get the gist of it. So this bill, after it was leaked, it then had the official reading in parliament, which is the initial stage of it in the process of becoming a law. So now it has been referred to a committee, and the job of the committee is to review it and either suggest edits. So the committee can send it back to the MPs, members of parliament who wrote the bill, or they could move the bill along, or they could stall it. So right now it's like in this gray area with this committee, and we don't expect to hear anything back until October because parliament is in recess currently. But Sam George has promised that it will be signed into law in October. So that's basically where the fight stands now, is that we are trying to stop this bill from seeing any further. And all of this in the midst of just like environment. So like the Ghanaian media has been so disappointing. The Ghanaian media platforms homophobes, refuses to platform queer people unless we are willing to debate with homophobes live on air. So if they say like, we want you to come on the show, we're going to bring Foa Morning or Sam George, and you say no, won't put you on the show, but they will still put Sam George or Foa Morning on the show. So the Ghanaian media, they actually formed a group. That group calls itself, obviously not all the media, but a subsection of the media formed a group. They claim that they are advocates against LGBT. So they have claimed that their job is to ensure that the government doesn't give gay people any rights. Again, the media.
What's your business?
Right. And the media supporting a bill that criminalizes freedom of speech does not
make
sense.
We don't see how it's going to affect them. Like, it's something that is everywhere, basically, in Africa. Like, they're oppressing us, and you think, oh yeah, they're oppressing them, everybody's just happy, mm-hmm. like, oh yay, they deserve it and everything, but you don't see how it's going to come back to you. You don't see that if they can do this, they can actually catch you on the road and say, oh, you're among them.
And I mean, we've been trying to make that argument. People aren't really listening. A lot of like figures have made the same argument, but it's not landing. The atmosphere of homophobia is picking up. We've had reports of people being attacked, like some really heartbreaking stuff. Like one gay man was put in the hospital. He was minding his business, walking down the street. People decided to attack him. They beat this man so badly that he had to be hospitalized for an extended period of time, and so bad that I personally didn't watch the videos because videos were going around, but the people I know who have watched it, like, scarred from what they did to this man. And all of this is happening in the midst of also the U.S. Department of State threatening Ghana about everything that Ghana's doing, the World Bank saying, like, hey, if you don't stop this, we won't help Ghana out. We won't give you any more loans. So it's like, country itself is also threatening its own international standing because homophobia is that important to the leaders of our country.
Apparently, to most African leaders, actually.
You know, and the last thing I will say, because I know I've been talking for a long time, but just so much has happened. The last thing I will say is that I'm going to tie it back to this organization, the World Council of Families. Foa Morning and his group claim that they are not involved with this organization in any way. They claim that they're a purely Ghanaian group of people defending Ghana. But one, there was that conference that happened where Foa Morning and co were in attendance. But two, if you actually look at the language of the bill that's proposed in Ghana, I know you said it's the most extensive one you've seen in Africa because they took language from all these different African bills and put it all together. And the places where they, like the countries where they took the language from, are countries where we know that the World Council of Families operates. Like, we have attached them to Uganda, we've attached them to all these different countries. How are you denying that they're involved in this? And then, coincidentally, the bill is named after this group that's claiming they're not connected to World Council of Families, but they are. So there's also that irony of, like, they claim they're protecting Ghana, but the bill itself is, you know, it's Westerners trying to control Ghana, basically. So yeah, that's where things stand. And I know I've spoken for almost an hour, but
it's totally fine. It's a lot. It's a lot to talk about. And I know that we didn't even touch some of the things while talking about it. So I am just baffled because I didn't even know some part of it, right? But I thought, like, I knew enough to, you know, like, this is insane. But listening to you talk about it, wow. So yeah, my next question is, what can queer Nigerians, queer, basically queer Africans around Africa and, you know, in diaspora, what can we do to help?
For the queer diaspora, I think that me, myself, as a queer diaspora, I think we are in a unique situation where we are able to be more vocal. We are able to show our faces in ways that our siblings at home aren't able to do. So I would say that for us in the diaspora, it's really important, one, to spread, you know, awareness of what's happening. And I know we always say spread awareness, but in this case, it's actually really important because, unfortunately, a lot of African governments are in a lot of ways held up to not pissing off Western governments and Westerners. So spreading the news has actually helped because there's a lot of pressure, and I believe some of that pressure is what led to the arrested activists being released. So that's really important. Also, there are a lot of calls for donations. So if you see one that comes across and if you have a few dollars to spend, please do that. I think the most popular fund that gets the most donations is for LGBT Rights Plus Ghana, but there are other smaller organizations. So Rightify Ghana is another org that's working really hard to spread awareness and challenge, you know, everything that's happening. So I really, really direct diaspora in those ways. If you can hold a protest, if you have a Ghanaian embassy or, you know, consulate in your country or city and you can organize a protest, that would be beautiful. We've had that happen in DC. We've had it happen, I believe, in London. We've had it happen in New York City. And they're small protests, but it's making Ghanaian politicians kind of see that they're ruining their reputation in the West. And that is slowly turning the wheel as well. I think in terms of what queer Africans on the continent can do, I think, one, a lot of you guys have a lot of knowledge about opposing these kind of things because, unfortunately, we've seen the same process be repeated in so many different countries, Nigeria, for instance, unfortunately. So, you know, we're really asking that you find it in your heart to build solidarity with us, share the knowledge that you have, basically any resources that you have, because, unfortunately, for us, This is new for us in Ghana. Like, the thought of it becoming a law is something that we've never seen before. So we are learning as we go, but there's a wealth of information and activism happening on the continent that we are trying to tap into. I think for straight allies, y'all need to put your faces and your names out there. Like, stop worrying about friends and your family. And, like, I understand that. I get it. You don't want to alienate yourself from your people. If you're going to be an ally, you need to be an ally. And this is a time where the lives and freedoms of queer people are they're always in danger, but quite literally might be legally in danger. So I just need us to step up. We actually don't need allies. We need co-conspirators. We need you guys to be our partners in the crime of finding liberation.
Yeah, exactly. Since we're all criminals, I like how you said you don't need allies, because the word allies, right, has been debated for a really long time, like, what's the role of an ally, what is an ally, what does an ally do, and all of that, and all mm-hmm. of that, right? And I say, there's this thing I say where, like, I feel like to be an ally, you sort of have to inconvenience yourself in some way, right, for some people, and then world, this is just being idealistic now, the world is straight for you. And if you say you care about someone that the world is bent for, you have to inconvenience yourself in a way mm-hmm. that allows, like, you're not doing the work if you're not inconveniencing yourself in some way. Mm-hmm. If they can get that into their head, then we will move forward.
I mean, I do want to take this opportunity, I guess, to reach out to queer people on the continent and in the diaspora. All of us, our hearts are breaking, whether you are in Ghana or not. Everyone that I know has been in constant heartbreak for several months. Like, it's just unending. And I want you to know that if you're feeling that, if you're feeling the despair, it's okay to feel that, because we're all feeling it. You don't have to feel like, well, I'm in a relatively safe country, so like I don't get to feel emotions. You get to feel that, but I would also urge that you don't stop at just feeling that. You need to act on what you're feeling. And whether that means donating, whether that means forming communities, there are so many of us who, like Silent Majority, I'm sure a lot of you have heard that name before. We literally woke up one day and we were like, this is unfair. And we texted our friends and we came together and we are trying to do what we can. And I think that a lot more of us need to move into that action taking space, realize that you actually do have power and figure out how to use it. And yeah, I mean, we shall overcome whatever happens with this bill, this law. Making us criminal doesn't make us stop existing. Like, we are still going to be here. We are still going to fight you.
We're still here.
If writing a law made gay people disappear, like, we wouldn't even have made it to the 1900s, let alone 2021. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we're still going to be here. And they can try, but they can't kill us. Like, queer people are going to exist. And we just have to keep that in mind, that some way, somehow, we shall overcome, as other people have done before us. There are people who've done this work before we got here, and we're going to build on it. And the people who come after us are going to build on it, and we're just not going to stop. So that is where I want to leave y'all. And I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me on such, what I say, short notice. But yeah, this was very insightful, and I'm glad we had this talk. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad you invited me to, you know, rant at your audience for an hour.
So bye.
That was an insightful episode. I was not prepared for how that conversation went. I mean, I had been following the conversation on the homophobic violence happening in Ghana at the moment, but I did not know some of the things that Shekia said. For example, the things that happened before the safe house was raided. I didn't know that. Wow, we have a long way to go in terms of liberation for queer people and women in Africa, and I hope that one day we are eventually able to reach our goal. For our next episode, we'll also be having an interesting guest coming in to talk about something very interesting, and I can't wait to share that with you. So until then, to your host, Rainbow. Have a lovely day. Bye.